if you want.
Okay.
Thank you.
Do you want me to hand this to you when you do it, or do you want it here?
That's great. That's okay. Fine. Thank you very much.
Oh, is that you?
I'm Adrian.
Finally.
Okay, Adrian, you're in. Okay. And
yes, ma'am.
All right. And then roll two. All righty.
We got two there.
Yeah, you got two called in.
Four, five. Okay. Six.
Four. Yes, sir.
We're ready?
You're ready, Mark.
Okay, I'm going to call the meeting to order, and as required by state law, this meeting is open to the public by telephonic communications. The college is complying with the suspended proceedings of the Open Meetings Act in accordance with Section 418.016 of the Texas Government Code. Members of the public are now entitled to participate and may attend in person or through remote connections. And if there's no one here to say anything, then Mr. Barr has agreed to give us our invocation.
Thank you, Lord, so much for bringing us together to do business at this college. Lord, be with us. Give us your wisdom. Give us your guidance. Help us to make the right choices for this college and this community. We thank you for all the many benefactors that we have, Lord. We praise you and we glorify you for people that are so interested in helping this community and helping this college. We thank you. May we do all things in your will. We praise your name. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.
Amen. Thank you.
Amen.
All right. This time the board will hear comments and questions from individuals who have not requested a specific place on the agenda and want to address the board. Is there anyone that wishes to address the board? Seeing no one, we're going to move on to our routine matters. You've had a chance to read the minutes, checklist, and monthly reports with the personnel matters. And I'll need a motion to approve those.
So moved.
I have a motion to have a second.
Second.
I have a second. All in favor say aye.
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 Thank you. Motion passes. All right. No unfinished business, so we'll go into new business. We need to have a special little deal here right now. It's Marissa's birthday. and
it was Ben's the other day.
Yeah, and Ben too. So I think probably if y'all all don't mind, can we sing happy birthday to him?
Sure.
Wouldn't that be nice? Who's going to lead off?
I vote for you.
Yeah.
I can't sing. Okay, all together, right here. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, Marissa and Ben. Happy birthday to you. That's great. Thank you very much. All right. Our next item on the agenda is gifts and initiatives grants.
All right. Dr. Freeman. As you heard in the prayer and as you know, we are very blessed to have a lot of people that support our college and all of our different campuses. And we have several that we're going to be bringing forward to you today, but we're going to start off with a special recognition. Lee and Dorothy Straley, the parents of Leanne Bird. And many of you will remember that Leanne was the provost for our St. Angel campus for several years and was in the community college world and up in Amarillo College for years. And then we got really lucky when David brought her to St. Angelo and she started at Howard College. And when Leanne started at Howard College, it was one of those situations. We didn't have many jobs open at that point in time, and she was just like, I'll take whatever job I want to get in. She got in, she got started, and then eventually she would be the provost. that to me is indicative of the people that we're recognizing today, and those are her parents. Her parents very definitely believed in hard work, and I want to read to you the resolution that we have put together in honor of this special day. And actually, this was written mainly, a lot of this is Leanne's words, and we just changed it up a little bit. It says, whereas Lee and Dorothy Straley lived a motto that carried forward to their future generations, work hard, do what is right, and go forward knowing you have done the very best you can. And whereas Lee and Dorothy Straley believed in learning, striving to educate the family, to look ahead to what is possible by educating yourself and learning about the world and how it works. And whereas Lee and Dorothy Straley supported learning and education, believing it should be earned, not given, with a price to be paid and an understanding and appreciation for financial cost, family, and livelihood cost. And whereas Leanne and David Bird's gift will establish the Lee and Dorothy Straley Endowed Scholarship to further the legacy of Leanne's parents, their bedrock belief in education and learning, and to let those students who understand the cost to know there are those who believe in them that they do not even know. Be it therefore resolved that the Board of Trustees of the Howard County Junior College District wishes to express our sincere appreciation to Leanne and David Bird for the opportunity to share this family motto with Howard College students. Two, work hard, do what is right, and go forward knowing that you have done the very best you can. And so I will tell you, having watched Leanne, they did it right. They don't know her brothers like I know Leanne, but had the opportunity to see their product. And so we're so honored that Leanne and David have made the decision to create this endowment in honor of her parents. And so, Mr. Chairman, if you'd like to give this to Leanne and David, if y'all want to come forward, and we'll take a picture here. Thank you all so much. The way that Leanne and David have positioned this particular scholarship, it's going to go for those students that sometimes that show up that are struggling and need that little bit of help. And so Leanne understands it well. As the provost for the campus, she talked to many students that at the very last they were trying to figure out how they were going to go to college, and often she was making that last minute trying to pull it together to see how a student could be helped. And so she knew the need and came up with this, and I believe that is, again, a real testimony to Leanne's parents. This is Leanne doesn't want this to be about her, but it's about her parents, and they taught you right, Leanne. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Thank y'all. Okay. And y'all can stay or y'all can leave.
All right. Go, you can go eat your chocolate.
Thank y'all for
you.
Being here.
We really appreciate it.
And we'll start getting that. We'll have fun with the scholarships next. Yeah.
Okay, we're going to go through the rest of the resolutions.
Yes, sir. And so we also have resolutions for the Big Spring Area Foundation, the McGarry-Regan Foundation, Dr. Brittany Stone Draper Vocal Scholarship Resolution, and Dr. Robert P. Hayes Memorial Scholarship Resolution. What we will be doing, we will have other opportunities to give those resolutions to those individuals, and so at that point in time, I'll read those resolutions, but we need you just to approve all those today.
Okay, we need to approve all these resolutions. Have a motion, have a second?
Second.
I have a second. All in favor say aye.
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 All right, motion passes. Thank you very much. Deaf Warden this week.
Mr. Chairman, before we do that, okay, if we can, is Eric still here or did he? Okay, Eric's still here. If we could, let's move that part of the agenda that we have on the update on the student's information system. He is in the middle of training, and if you don't mind, could we get him? Because they need to go back to training at 1 o'clock.
Sure, where is that?
That is toward the, it is under, it's number 4 under new business or monitoring.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. All right. Thank you. Appreciate you coming.
Yeah, and Amy, they're both in the middle of training.
The end user training is going on financially and not this morning. And admissions and registrar functions will meet today to start going through the software and learning processes and how to move their day-to-day activities into CAM. So that's going to be ongoing. They're already talking about a next trip where Tracy, who is the representative, will be here for a week next time, and they're looking at dates in October or early November.
To launch the financial aid.
Sorry, Tracy would join us for lunch.
Right. And so the financial aid has been scheduled to launch in October, so we're still working toward that and getting that going first.
Yeah, they're
going
to start processing new financial aid ISERs for students and start the new financial aid year for next year.
Yeah. So we're moving along. It's a very involved process, and there's a lot going on behind the scenes. But they've had the training this morning. They'll have it this afternoon. We're going to get Eric back over as they start at 1, and Amy's staying. Brian's going back over at 1. And do you want to say a little bit about the third-party assessment that we just finished with AT&T?
Okay. Every 2 years we're required by the state to have a third-party assessment for IT security and controls. And over the last few weeks, we've been providing documentation for our processes and the things that we're doing. And then last week, we had scheduled interviews with IT staff, human resources, the business office, our financial office, and Steve, and from purchasing, and they look at processes of how accounts, business transactions as far as purchasing agreements, and how all those things kind of tie together to look at IT security as a whole and how those types of things are organized and processed through the organization. And so the auditor will be reviewing all the documentation, interview notes, and he'll be preparing a preliminary report in a week or two. We'll review it, go over it with them, and then I think early to mid-November, the final report is going to be presented to the IT team and executive leadership, and then the that was the report that I think we'll come back and share with you either in December or early January.
And that will be an executive session, so we'll be coming back and giving you that report, so you'll have an update on that.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
All right. And they also, I also participated in one of the interviews and, you know, again, very interested in how the board is involved, understanding the importance of safety, the security of the system. And so anyway.
And facilities was part of that.
Yeah, as
there
well.
There are questions about facilities as well. So just about the infrastructure that's protecting just maybe not the internal data in the systems, but disaster recovery as far as fire suppression, flood control, backup. yeah, everyone laughs at that. No?
Yeah.
we've had it all. So.
Not, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but too much. Yeah.
When is the estimated date for the CAMs to be completely live and completely on board?
Summer? I mean, we should be in fall 23. My dates are off. We should be live. Is it June or July?
It's
23.
There's still a lot to go.
Yeah. There's still a lot to go. Yes.
Yeah, just starting the financial aid part because of the way that they process, and you have to get that ready several months ahead for students next year. So that's one of the reasons that we're going ahead and getting the financial aid. They'll actually, as I understand it, they'll be on both systems, and then whenever we transition in the summer, then we'll be able to go live with the financial aid that they're doing right now that's on the new system. So everything will be ready to go for next year. Okay?
Great.
Right. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you
very much. Okay, now we can move back to Deaf Awareness Week celebration update.
Yes. Thank you for doing that. And I appreciate the fact that our people that were ready for Deaf Awareness Week are patient about it. Okay, Mady Vandehay. Where's Mady? Oh, there she is, right there. You need to know that Mady was one of our students several years ago, and she finished it at SWID, and then she went to Gallaudet in Washington, D.C., and now we're very fortunate that she's back as one of our employees. And so she, last week, as a part of the Deaf Awareness Week celebrations with the students, she was responsible for some of the presentation on Wednesday, and I know she worked on some of the other days as well, but we've asked her to give an overview of kind of what happened with the students last week, and so maybe you can take it from here.
Deaf Awareness Week is the full month of September. It's celebrated. We celebrated last week. The purpose of Deaf Awareness Week is to let those acknowledge and learn about deaf culture. Sometimes people aren't aware. So those who have never been exposed to a deaf person, the culture, or our history, that's the reason why we have Deaf Awareness Week. It's a good start to show people who we are so they can have an understanding of our culture and learn what deaf people entail. To learn sign language, some basic signs, of course. And so last week we had a couple events on Monday and Tuesday at the SWID campus. We showed different videos. We had different performances, ASL stories, gesture stories, songs that were interpreted. We showed art from deaf artists. We talked about oppression. We talked about hands, painting, and signing and culture again that was on Monday and Tuesday at the SWID campus. And then Wednesday we had an event here at this campus. It was very successful. We had Howard College students with our SWID students involved in that activity. They listened to presentations. We talked a little bit about history, ASL history, the beginning of it, and then we also talked about history of Black American Sign Language also, and knowing what the difference was with the deaf community and the Black deaf community, which has just come about and is known now. So we talked about those. two differences, and we had a few different performances, and then we'd work together and teaching them some basic ABCs and different signs. Everybody was very comfortable working with each other. Katie Crestwell did an amazing job. We worked really close together. We wanted something to collaborate with both campuses. So we didn't want that disconnect, so it was really a good start to show the students from Howard College can be friends with the SWID students as well without issue. Thursday we had an event at Starbucks. I think we had around 20 or 25 people show from the Howard College campus, and again, the SWID students and faculty were there as well. So it was really neat working with the manager, trying to have everybody introduce themselves, have their names signed to them, and have everybody try to communicate on their own. We did some tastings of the different coffees and different desserts that they provide. So it was really neat watching everybody trying to learn the culture and communicate. I think we stayed until about 8:30 that evening. But again, it was really neat seeing both cultures come together. And a lot of them were saying that they wanted something like this again to happen. So it was really a good experience. Katie and I both talked about also having something for next year, and I'm continuing it on throughout the years as we come together and partnering up. And so we'll see how it goes from now on.
All right. Thank you, Maddie.
All right. You're welcome. Thank you. Dr. Sparks, do you mind if I head out?
I think we're fine. Maddie, are you? Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. I thought, yeah.
Okay.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you.
Yes, ma'am.
All right, thank you. That's very nice. That's report.
That's really, I think that's what I can think of.
Wait a minute. Stephanie, pull Mighty, just a minute. So, okay.
Because that's one of the advantages of Howard College.
Absolutely.
Is you can be exposed to deaf culture and to SWIFT.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Nobody else can do that but us.
Exactly. Right. We're very unique, and we talk about that, and that's why y'all wanted the vision that we have, because we see ourselves as a national model, and we have a deaf campus. I wanted to get across the fact that Maydee had gone to Gallaudet, and I think, again, many people know about Gallaudet as being a deaf university in the United States, but we're still trying to get the word out about that we're the community college concept in the United States for the deaf and hard of hearing. And I was really excited to find out. I had no idea that there was black ASL until Maydee shared that last Wednesday, and I think that was a revelation to a lot of the deaf people as well on the SWID campus. I think there were a lot of people that didn't realize that there was a black ASL as well. And so that was very interesting what she shared. And she went through and shared different signs that were in ASL and black ASL. But again, it's that cultural enrichment that we think is very important. And I was really pleased that the students were interacting the way they were.
Very good. Very good report. Thank you. Okay, our next item is the COVID-19 class status 29.
Yes, I am so happy that we are getting to a point that there is not as much to report on. And you see that in your presentation this time. And really, we are to the point that what we're mainly sharing with you, yes, we still have some cases that are in the region in our service area, but we certainly have seen a drop. There's been more activity, more numbers in our Tom Green area, but you can almost see the other areas of our service area have somewhat leveled off. But again, it's there, but thank goodness we're not seeing the kind of illness that we saw before. What we're mainly doing at this point is we're trying to finish up how we are using the CARES funding. What you do continue to see in the report are all the reporting that's having to happen. And again, Brenda and team are the ones that are reporting. And to make this point, the federal government wants the information shared one way. The state
the LBB and the coordinating board want it shared another way. So there's constant reporting. But we're coming to the end. In June of 23, we have to have all those funds completed as far as their expenditures. And we are working on some final, and we mentioned some of that in the workshop this summer. We're working on some, basically, they're new versions of the distance rooms, but they're going to have a lot more of Zoom capability because that was something that we did a lot during the pandemic, in the height of the pandemic, and so we'll be coming back with some of that. We also had our first summit back that was face-to-face. It will be 2 weeks this Friday, and it was the first time we were able to get all of our employees together in the last few years, and that was a great day. So that is, again, reflective of what we're trying to do as far as how we go forward. And then finally, and really we had our graduations last May, we tried to have as much normalcy as possible. But you're going to be hearing more about the fact that we are going to be having a December graduation for our San Angelo campus. And, again, you'll hear more about that in the weeks ahead. That's all.
All right. Thank you. Next item on the agenda is Education Code 51.252 report.
All right. Amy and then Christy McKiska. We are now required under Texas Education Code to have certain reports on an annual basis, and so I'm just going to let them tell you a little bit about it.
Okay. We are required to report, it's the TEC, the Texas Education Code, report quarterly as the District Title IX Coordinator to Dr. Spark for all four campuses, and then annually, either in the spring or fall semester, Dr. Spark then reports to the board, and then by October 31st of that year, we will annually report to the coordinating board, and it goes on our website. And if you do go to our Howard College website, we are required now by law to have a Title IX page. And so in that Title IX page, you will find the report that she is presenting to you. And you will also find then information on training, how to deal with Title IX, and various other items for our students as well. I am happy to say that our summary data report is zero. We are required to leave out any pending Title IX cases. However, I'm happy to say that we have none of those either. So our report for September 1st, 21 through August 31st, 22 is zero.
All right, super. Okay. Excellent.
I might just add, this involves sexual harassment, sexual assault, dating violence, or stalking. Anything that's under that code.
But
we are very fortunate.
Yeah, very good.
And Christy, I would also say that through the student services area, y'all are trying to do a lot of training and doing that throughout the year so that students are aware.
And we do have, we'll have a sexual assault awareness table that our student government puts on, and we try to bring awareness to all of that. And right now it is Suicide Prevention Month, and so we are putting out the new number, 988, that is the new national number for suicide prevention, which a lot of times stems from a Title IX case.
Right. Christy is our Dean of Students for the Big Spring campus and works with all the other campuses as well on this Title IX effort. We also have some online training for students.
Yes, we have online training. So on the website, there are all kinds of training. I'm attending a Title IX conference next month, but there's a lot of training out there. I do have one coming up tomorrow that is training on what information can be shared, how to share the information, and how to make sure that we are meeting the requirements. Would you like to make sure then that I also train the directors on the other campuses so that they are aware of any new Title IX changes which next summer we will have changes to Title IX, because we do have a new president in office, and it's usually about a year and a half in when the changes take place.
So, actually, the students are required to complete at least three modules, you know, to learn about this, and so that's always a challenge.
Yeah, we're trying.
But with the software, they have Christy implemented, y'all approved what, last year?
Yes, with Safe Colleges. Or
it's similar to what we do as employees on our training. They have to go to the same thing, not all, not everything.
But they do have one specific to Title IX and also specific Title IX for athletes. So they do have that as well.
Thank you.
Any questions? Do they have it for deaf students as well?
Yes. Okay. Yeah. The way we're set up, they have it set up where they can watch. It is closed captioning. It is not the best way to get it to them, but it is getting it to them, and it is required for all students. We do check, and they have a due date that it is to be completed by.
Very good. Thank you. Okay. I'm not going to try to pronounce that. Fifth year report update.
SAC-COC. All right. Everyone knows SAC-COC is our reaffirmation process that we go through every 10 years, and basically it is colleges in the southern part of the United States that come together and as peers determine what standards they believe are important to say that you have a quality institution, and we again, as a group of institutions, determine what those are. And then we hold ourselves accountable by, we have to go through every 10 years, you have to go through a process, and teams come and they read your information before they come, and then they come to your campus and they go through and look at everything with a fine-tooth comb. But in between that, we have what is called a fifth year report. It's hard to believe that we're already at a point where we're doing a fifth year, because we just had people, seems like yesterday, that were on campus for a reaffirmation process, which we were reaffirmed, and that was a great day. But now it's fifth year report, and so Amber Kelly Stokes, where did that come? That was Amber Buskey way back there. Amber Kelly Stokes and then Amy, both of you want to talk about, So Amy worked on it the last time and was our liaison, and so she felt like some other people needed to have the experience, the vaccination. And so Amber took it on, and she has been the liaison, did a great job. So give them an update.
Sure. So the fifth year report covers 25 of 74, I believe, standards that are set out by SAC. We had a unique challenge in that right after our last reaffirmation report, SAC completely redid all their standards. And so we were working in some cases 13.7, for example, looking at physical resources was what, four standards, Fabian, that we were combining into one. And we also had to deal with not just being in compliance, but demonstrating that we were in compliance during COVID. And so in many cases, we were showing, hey, this is what 2019 looked like, and then this is what 2021 looked like, and they're not the same, but we were able to maintain support of our students. And so we submitted it September 15th or 14th. It was due September 15th. It will be reviewed by peer institutions. They will meet in December to decide on their findings. We should hear in January if they want any follow-up information. My understanding is they always want follow-up information. And if there are things that they believe that we need to demonstrate more thoroughly or things of concern, we will have monitoring reports from there. So this was a good learning experience because Amy has not left us yet, and so there was a lot of hand-holding. There were also a number of us and people in this room who learned the hard way how SAC works, Christy and Fabian and many of us who had not really been on the ground before, so there was a lot of patience from leadership. And then we're already preparing for our 10-year. We're identifying people to start going through trainings. In about 2 years, we'll start actually the training process through SAC for our team. but we are already working on plans. I think we have a scheduled meeting next week for documented continuous compliance, so that we are always in compliance, which we should be, but that we are documenting that in a way that is able to access the information effectively. So any questions about that?
Lots of work, I can tell you.
It's great.
Yeah.
You've got the job.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I mean, honestly, they might fire me.
Sounds like a lot of busy work to me.
Oh, it's a lot of work, and you have to prove everything. I mean, it's like you can say, because you have to say yes that we're in compliance, but then, and you can have a little write-up, but then you have to have all this proof, and so you're sending in pictures, you're sending in documentation from meetings, you're sending, you know, all these things, and so it is not an easy process. I think what happens is we as educators, we get it to a certain level, and then we decide, okay, now let's take it to another level, and it just gets harder and harder, but they did great.
Very good. Thank you. Okay, Big Spring, Lamesa, San Angelo, Twid Campus, nothing there?
No, sir.
So we're going down to SAS Fall 2022 Enrollment and Contact Hour.
All right. You were shared information from the fall enrollment, and we presented it to you in different ways this time because we had a different situation this time. And you're going to be seeing in the probably next year how we're going to be reporting a little differently to you as we move into more implementation of 8-week courses. So Amy, I'll let you kind of go through the process.
I think this is the order that you have them in, but the one is the fall 2022 census day enrollment. Most of you probably know, but I'm going to say, not never assume anything. The Texas Higher Education Coordinating Board sets a census date for every semester term. And what that is, if it's a 16-week fall, long fall semester, it's a 12th class day. Okay, so on that 12th class day, they take a snapshot of your enrollment, and that is your enrollment according to the state, period. But then, if that makes sense, so then what happens if you have a second term that starts in the middle of the semester, that's called the second 8-week term, you've seen some of that on our documentation, that's not counted until your spring numbers. And that's why, just to point that out, that in a minute I'll talk about some strategies that we're doing. But an example that happened in this semester, if you'll notice, this on the census state enrollment, it looks we are down by about 17% overall as a district. But what happened is, unfortunately, we have some schools that were struggling with buses, and Sam's correct me if I say anything wrong, it was primarily in our San Angelo, our largest schools, they were struggling with bus routes, getting things organized at the first of the year, so we were not able to get those students enrolled in time for that 12th class day. And so therefore, I won't go into all the numbers, that second chart that shows the comparison of the census state preliminary headcount, if you'll notice, Rebecca Zornaway, the chief reporting officer, and down at the bottom, you can see how many students actually registered past the census state. It's 791. So that's significant. They will eventually, I mean, they will be counted in our enrollment. But when you see coordinating board reports versus some of your internal reports that we share with you, that's where the differences come in. And years ago, I mean, 20-plus, we just decided it's better to share with the board the coordinating board enrollment numbers, because that's what we're that's what we will be paid on with the contact hour funding. Is that clear as mud?
Mm-hmm.
So that's why you'll see, you know, the differences up front that seem more than usual. Too many papers here. And then if you look at the contact hour fall census date. Another thing I want to point out, sometimes we say preliminary. The only reason we say that is because Rebecca Villanueva has to go in and certify our numbers with the coordinating board. And until they say it's certified, we're not going to tell you it's certified. There will always be slight variations because of errors in data entry. You know, we're humans and entering these things, so there will be slight variations. That's why she will have preliminary on here until we've certified that with the coordinating board. Excuse me.
But you'll see. Does this mean that in the spring, when they pick that up, all of our numbers will be above last year because it'll pick all these back up?
Possibly. But it's not going to show spring enrollment. I'm trying not to get into the weeds and make it even more confusing. It will show them what's called flex courses. Anything, fall flex courses will be any enrollment terms, classes that start after the census date. And so she has standard reporting procedures, and that's important because I'm going to talk more about non-standard reporting procedures. Standard reporting procedures, and I should have made her come. She's going to say I'm butchering a bit, but there's a fall and spring long semesters. She has a set of reports that she has to submit, and then she has one or two in the summer. I can't remember the summer ones, but in that spring report, it's going to also catch any of the fall flex courses.
So those numbers will go way up.
Hopefully, I won't come in here and say our spring numbers are way up above last year. We'll report spring to spring and show you where the fall flex courses were.
You'll see it. But it won't.
I'm trying to make it more just like it is. Tell it like it is. I mean, we always have. I didn't sound like we're not trying to. But we're trying to point out every term, every enrollment, so you'll see how it flows.
So we aren't really down 17. I mean,
as far as
reported,
yeah, the way it, yes,
the way it's reported.
That's right.
The coordinating board numbers that come out publicly, it will look like we are down that much, but that's based on that census day snapshot enrollment.
Yep.
And at some point, that gets
it does get picked back up.
Yeah.
But it's just, again, it's an unfortunate situation that we had. You know, we've had to deal with, and you know, actually, if you look at it, if we hadn't had that circumstance happen, and we were looking at fall enrollment, the big spring enrollment would be down 2%. La Mesa is up by 5.7%, and SWID is down by 4 students, so it's 7%. San Angelo, though, is down 27% because of those numbers. There's about 700 students that were not... they were unable to get in before census. And so that's why that number's that way. And then the contact hours then will reflect that. We will still, these students that are coming in after certification, they will be part of our contact hours. We're in the base year. They will be part of the contact hours. But it's just because of the way that it happened. You know, it was unfortunate. We tried. They were trying to get them in, but and it wasn't, our admissions people. It was just the school district was having trouble getting things in. And so, but then when you look at it, when you get all those numbers together, then the district, when you get the fall, those fall flex numbers in, then it's really, the district is down by 2%. But unfortunately, it's just the way they report things, and you have certain dates that things have to be in, and that's what happened. It's unfortunate, but that's what happened.
Hopefully, it will still come out. You know, we'll be ahead in the end. But right now, it will appear that it's not appear. We are, according to the coordinating board numbers, we're down by those amounts.
Yeah. So yeah.
You going to talk about?
Yeah.
So Dr. Sparkson, if you remember that base year, from March 1st, even year, through February 28th, usually 28th, right? That is that base year that, you know, you've been, that you know, that's our numbers for the next 2 years. And I mentioned to you the standard reporting system. So to kind of go on to the next item, if I'm assuming that's where it went.
Yes.
Gosh, numerous years ago, I mean, I should know that, but I don't. Colleges started experimenting with establishing a schedule with 8-week courses as opposed to only 16-week courses. Odessa College was a lead in this effort. And so, again, it's been 8 years.
Probably.
At least 8 years that the Odessa College started it. In other states, they've been doing things like this a lot for a long time. Well, little by little, and of course we would hear about these things at conferences and start learning, and we started saying, you know, we need to learn more, we need to do this. We had all intentions of starting it earlier, and guess y'all know what hit. And things got, you know, put on the back burner with this. But from the colleges that have implemented primarily eight-week terms, okay, and I'll talk a little more about that, the data that they have shown is the retention rates, graduation rates, persistence rates have just, I mean, they've gone off the, I mean, it's been skyrocketed from the numbers that I have seen. And so, based on the results from this eight-week schedule design, the Texas Success Center worked to help colleges that wanted to implement this. And so they started it's called Implementing and Scaling 8-Week Courses. And what they're allowing you to do, I don't want to...
No, go ahead. Yeah, go ahead. Yeah.
I mean, I just don't want to get in the weeds.
Okay.
Remember we talked about that standard reporting? Okay. So think about a 16-week term. You know, you take your course for 16 weeks. Well, and you take 12 hours. So you have full-time 12 hours. Well, this is meaning that students will take, you can't take 12 hours in 8 weeks. You're going to take maybe 6 and 6 or 9 and 6, depending on what we come up with. Well, then think about that. Standard, think about that year. All of a sudden, think of what our enrollment would be if we're only reporting that first 8 weeks. We're going to drop drastically. And so when Odessa College approached the coordinating board again years ago, they allowed them to kind of be a pilot college, and they created a non-standard reporting formula. And again, I'm probably butchering all the words, but it was a way to allow Odessa, in this case, not to be penalized for that snapshot census state enrollment, and to allow them to take into consideration the enrollment throughout that full first 8 week and second 8 weeks. That makes sense. And so since then, and with the results, other colleges have come on board. Grayson, Perry, I had my little list.
Tyler.
Alvin.
Tyler.
Kilgore, several anyway, have come on board, and again, the numbers just, you can't, it's just overwhelming how much improvement has been made with the 8 weeks. And so the Texas Success Center, in partnership with the coordinating board, set up a system by which a college can petition the coordinating board to allow us to move to an 8-week model. And we had, Dr. Sparks had to submit a letter, and we had to be approved. And then part of the model is they pair you with a college that has already successfully implemented this model to teach you how to do it. And so we were fortunate enough to be requested and were paired with Grayson College. Grayson College, you know, they're on CAMS, the system that we're moving to, because that's going to be a big piece of it, is making sure your student information system is works and counts all the numbers and everything flows. So that was important. Excuse me. And so what we're doing is we have said that we would like to move to an 8-week model by fall 23. That's not too far away. And so we have been going through training with the Success Center. We have I need to give Cindy credit. I told her she needs to be up for more than I do. But Cindy, and this is part of the Texas Pathways model, because again, that talks to me about getting students on a path and getting them through to success as soon as possible. And so Cindy is our Pathways lead for our institution, so she coordinates our trips and our training and things. And so we have a lead implementation team that has been doing these trainings. We bring in faculty and support staff as appropriate for the different trainings. Well, we, about seven of us, went to Grayson last week, and there were four colleges there with us. That Grayson is also their mentor college, and we learned a lot. You know, we came back excited, nervous, like, what are we doing in some ways, because they were very helpful. They told us lessons learned, do not do this, you know, because it was a rough start for Grayson in the beginning. But, again, the testimonies they gave were, you know, it's like, wow, it's a culture change, but it also, they just said, why would you not do this when the data is so good and shows? But there's a lot of things that we have to do. It's not just saying, okay, faculty, you need to put all your courses in an 8-week term. Because, I mean, we teach summer school, right? Summer classes are less than 8 weeks. So it's not like our faculty have not become very well at that. But all of a sudden, you have a whole system where students are expected to finish their coursework, two courses, maybe three, in 8 weeks. So we have to get Tara in group, all the advisors on board to say, okay, what's our threshold of an absence is? Probably one time. You know, it's just like all of your intervention things have to be in place to address this and help these students be successful, or we're setting them up, we don't want to set them up for failure. Financial aid is a huge piece of this, because now all of a sudden the financial aid system, kind of like the coordinating board, they're used to this standard 16-week model that's been in place, you know, for forever. And so we're having to adjust the way we're going to award financial aid. And it's making our financial, unless she's not here, it's making them very nervous, because you have to be so careful when you're talking about money and distributing and how you help students. So it's financial aid, it's a support system, I mentioned reporting. So now we will be approved, if we continue this, to do a non-standard reporting model, and we will basically have 2 weeks after the standard reports are due to be able to go in and capture the numbers. And I think the coordinating board has a formula set up that they help you do this. And so that's why it's important. It's more important now than ever for y'all to understand how the numbers and how they can be reported. But yeah, this is what's really happening with the numbers.
Yeah.
So I could go on and on about it because there's so much
to do. I want to make sure I understand. So like say you're a full-time student with 12 hours a semester. You would do like 6 the first 8 weeks and 6 the second.
Yeah.
Right? But you're still considered full-time because you're taking 12 hours within 16 weeks?
Yes. Actually, a full-time student is, I think, if it's an 8-week course, I think it is 6 hours. I can't remember.
Okay.
Because they already have some guidelines. Like if it's a summer term, it's a mini-term, it's 3 hours. It's like the number of weeks in the semester, that's about kind of what you gauge is full-time.
Okay.
But policies, procedures, I mean, there are so many things. It's like a domino. One thing falls, and you have to change other things because we have to change our terminology. We have to change our policies on academic appeals, on dean's list, honors, all these different things are going to be impacted. But we've got to keep our eye on that end goal is that students are in classes more successful. They're persisting to the next terms, the next year, to graduation, and hope it's greater numbers than before. That's our goal. More than you ever wanted to know.
There's a lot in there.
There's a lot to it. Our faculty, our staff will be doing lots of training. It's not popular with everyone. It's because it's just not living it or experiencing yet. It's very hard to see, wow, we want to make sure we're helping our students. But again, the numbers don't lie. And so that's why we've got to try to do this in such a way that that our students will be more successful than they are now.
All of this, again, Amy made reference to
pathways, and a lot of this is stemming from this whole pathways effort that we've been talking about for several years, trying to get students on a path, keep on a path, have them graduating with is hopefully only the hours they need, or if they graduate with just very little on top of what they need to complete. So that's helping them with their financial aid, if they're paying, they're not paying for classes they don't need. They complete whatever they are wanting to do. They get a certificate faster, a degree faster. If they're transferring, they're able to move on. So it's all, again, it's about outcomes. And you're going to, in a moment, I'm going to be talking to you about the Texas Commission on Community College Finance. And again, this is all tying into, it's a big movement, really, as far as how we are going to be funded. And so we're trying to prepare. It's different. It's changing up, again, how you report on enrollment. In
athletic eligibility, that's a big piece. I went to grades, and I kind of took that on as my project to try to learn about that, because you have to be, depending on the sport, you have to be enrolled in 9 hours before, or not, I don't know, so many hours when it's over. So there's just a lot of different, everyone's impacted by this.
Yeah.
In some way.
And to add to this, then, as y'all know, our majority of enrollment comes from dual credit across the district. Not by every campus, but all but the SWID campus. And so dual credit is a different animal. Some of the school districts are very interested in this 8-week approach. Some are not. And the colleges that are already in the 8-week, they have some lessons learned that we're gaining from them as far as how they work it with their school districts. And so we'll have some adjustments. There'll be some different scenarios that we may have with some of the high schools. They may not like the 8 weeks. We may keep 16-week. We may even be in a situation where we have some faculty that are, and I'm just, this is a possibility. Some may be mainly teaching dual credit as opposed to the other students because they'll keep their courses on a 16-week format. So it's going to be different.
That schedule is key.
Mm-hmm.
And if we were a Dallas, Houston, we could pull in regular adjunct to teach if we wanted to offer both 16-week, 8-week. We do not have that luxury to develop a schedule that you can get all you need in an 8-week, but I want 16 weeks so I can. We don't have that luxury, that ability. There may be some high level math classes is one that keeps coming out, and some of high level science classes may need to run the whole gamut of the 16 weeks with others 8 weeks. We're just going to have to look at our schedule. And see, one interesting thing that I don't know why I hadn't thought about this, but Grayson, I think others did, talked about how it takes about 2-3 years, and you're not that we want students to leave, but eventually those students that are with you now, they won't be here anymore, and so your student population will only know about 8-week term. But they've set it up so, like, their athletes, the vast majority of them go 2 days a week. I'm saying that publicly. But the coaches will love that because then they said they've been able to practice in the mornings, and then that frees up their afternoons. They can go to labs, if they're scheduled. So there's a lot of pluses that the colleges have found with this.
Okay. So all of that, we basically brought in student success, the Texas Success Center, as a part of what Amy was sharing, because that was going to also reflect into this fall enrollment. But bottom line, we will be moving toward, if we implement, then we will be asking the coordinating board to allow us to be in the non-standard reporting format, which then means next year, in a scenario like we've had this year, we would have a 2-week period where you're able to catch up on some of those that are coming in later. And so that ends up being your fall enrollment. And so we'll work through this, and obviously you'll be hearing more about it, but that's where we are right now. Okay?
You still have to take care of a rural promise, don't they also?
No, it didn't take care of the rural promise. So also, as a part of this, then Brenda and Brian, he's gone back to training, we also are looking at the rural promise update, and so you want to give that, or the rural promise.
Okay. So Rural Promise is a program that was an outgrowth of something, a College Promise program that started at Dallas Community College a couple of years ago, surrounding college affordability for students. We have been chosen to be in Cohort 2. So there's a group of rural community colleges that have already implemented this program in their areas, and they've learned a lot. Grayson's one of those colleges that we're working with. But basically what it does is it looks at, so tying directly into that Pathways initiative, getting students on the pathway, we want to make sure as part of that that they can afford to come to college. There are many families that feel that education is outside of their reach because of the costs that have been increasing over the years. So the Promise program basically, at its very root, says to generally high school students in a service area, that if you make certain pledges, you know, if you will fill out a FAFSA, if you will graduate from your high school, if you will do certain things, and that's part of the design work, that if you come to Howard College, after your financial aid and scholarships and everything else, we will make up the rest of that on your tuition fee or implement some sort of a scholarship. It's going to be tailored very specifically to what we can do here if we decide to move forward with this. It is a large undertaking to do this. It's part of a larger enrollment strategy that the college would need to implement. It's being kind of directed by Economic Mobility Systems, the Greater Texas Foundation, and the Rural College Alliance, this group that has brought this program to these rural community colleges because they believe that this is the area that really needs that sort of help. A lot of bigger urban colleges have a lot of resources, and they know out here that we don't have as many. Cohort 1 was North Central Texas College, Grayson College, and Tyler Junior College. They are all fully implemented at this point and helping the next group. We are in Cohort 2, which is Navarro College, Howard Hill, South Texas College, and Paris Junior College. And right now what we are doing is this is kind of a data gathering and design time period that we're in. We're doing a lot of the background work to find out, number one, what are the resources that we have towards this? How can we write for grants to help to fund this if we decide to move forward? Really, we have to decide through this data gathering and design process whether this is something that we actually want to do or not. So we'll come to a decision on that at the end of this process. And if so, you know, what will be the time frame that we're going to implement? Is this going to be a longer-term situation? Grayson went very fast, which they do on a lot of things. I was there while that was going on. And so, Brian and I had a phone call with Dr. Debbie Smart, who headed up that effort. We did that on Friday. Got a lot of really good information from her. We have a lunch and learn coming up with Dallas where we'll gather with all of these folks. And then Economic Mobility Systems has folks that are working directly with the team that's been put together to do this data gathering. So all that to be said, basically the College Promise is looking at bringing leadership coalition together in areas, so schools, city folks, county folks, to come behind this affordability thing, looking at workforce alignment. So we run labor market data to align, you know, what are the programs we have and all those sorts of things. Looks at student experience, you know, how are we getting those, how are we speaking to those students so that they know about the program? How do we get that funnel running into the College Promise program? It looks at where will we fund this from? We have to be able to pay for that sort of thing, and who are our partners there. And then it also looks at a platform capability. So part of the grant would be for us to implement Salesforce, which is used as a marketing and a student platform to track information and reach out to students, as well as aligning the systems within the college. There is also a piece where we work with the ISDs on student records coming in. We would need to be uploading large amounts of data automatically from the ISD. So transcripts and those sorts of things are all things that need to be addressed in the work that we are doing. So long story short, it is a college affordability where we want every single high school graduate within our service area to know that they can come to Howard College regardless of what their personal financial situation is. And we are looking at how that might be possible here now or in the future.
That's great. Yeah, and so let me just add, I don't know if y'all were picking up as far as the name. People still really don't know, they don't know what small rural is. Though the names of those colleges, they're still larger than some of the small colleges. And so at this point in time, in a lot of the phone calls that we've had so far, I continue to raise our hand and say, now we're small. We're truly small rural. Some of these other colleges are not. And you have to think in terms of it's a little different. So we're kind of, I would say, pioneering that size college in this effort. The Rural Community College Alliance, if y'all remember, we were a part of that we still are. First, we were in the Rural Community College Initiative, RCCI, that was funded by the Ford Foundation, and we were one of just a handful of colleges in the United States that were a part of the Rural Community College Initiative. From that, there's a group called the Rural Community College Alliance, and it's made up of small community colleges, which mainly are rural, across the United States. And so the RCCA group is wanting to get our size colleges into this movement. And so we're raising our hand and saying, okay, we want to look at this, but you need to understand we're different in the resources and what we can do. It's just different than what some of these other colleges can do. So basically what we're doing right now, Brian and Brenda Kay are going through, I'm calling it basically, it's a course that we're going through at this point. It's a planning course. Gives us a lot of good information, data, to see what it looks like out there for us. The other thing that I hope you're going to start seeing as we move into some more conversation, when we're talking about the Texas Community College, or the Texas Commission on Community College Finance, the way we're going to be funded going forward is going to be pushing back into what kinds of program, what does your workforce need? What kind of outcomes are you having? So we have got to start changing our whole way of thinking, and we're already thinking that way, but we're going to be funded differently, and I'll be sharing that in a minute, what those conversations are. So when we're talking about finding out what the information is in the local area as far as what labor market is doing and what business and industry wants. Again, it's all setting this up to move us to get ready for the way things are changing. And so we'll see what we find out when we go through the course. We may decide that the timing is we're not quite ready. We may need to wait another year or so, but we want to start learning so that we can get ready to be able to get ahead of some of these changes that are coming.
This is the thing that we're going to ultimately be the guarantor that any student in our service area that wants to go to college can come here.
Disadvantaged.
Well,
so it won't affect every student.
Correct. It's my understanding. It will, yeah.
So again, you're back to the whole thing where the two most important words in the United States are eligible and qualified. But we plan on a certain percentage of our operating revenue to be tuition revenue. We have tuition, we have taxes, and we have state funding. It seems to me that if we're not careful, this could trash our tuition revenue. because we're basically saying if you don't have the money for tuition, we'll pay for it, which means there's a potential huge budget hit there. And if I remember correctly, and I'm not sure I have it, I don't know if it's present here, but we take in something like $10 million a year in tuition.
Well, no, it's not that high. But let me, I can understand the reason you're asking these questions. What you do is you get foundations. It's not, you're not going to take a loss. You're going to get foundations to help provide that funding. And then the other thing that's happening, and when I get to, when we're talking about the Commission on Community College Finance, the other thing that is being discussed is state funding, increasing what they're giving in the Texas, it's the TEOG, TEOG fund, increasing funding in that so that there's more money for disadvantaged students. So there's things that are kind of lining up that are going to be funding sources. So we wouldn't be losing the revenue. It'd be coming from different places.
I'm kind of associating it just because I'm from the audiology world. Like, we have the tuition waiver for deafness and hard of hearing. If you meet a certain criteria, your tuition is covered by
right.
the state.
Right.
So it's almost like a program like that, but for disadvantaged students. Like,
yes.
It's a list of criteria that they would have to meet kind of thing?
Yes, but then there would be actual funding that would be, like, there wouldn't be waivers. There would be
okay.
actual scholarships.
Okay. So we would still be bringing in money just...
Correct. That's correct. That's correct.
Would that expand to the number of students that are funded outside just their private money?
That's the hope, that what's happening is that you have students that are choosing not to come to college because they don't know that they have the funds to do it. They don't know how to go about it. And so basically what you're doing is you're starting in high school and you are getting those students, they are seeing the promise. And they're going, oh, okay, I can go to college and I'm going to be able to have this scholarship that's going to help me get through college. And so it's not just like a Pell Grant that's out there, but it's other options that are available to them.
So it should expand.
It should. That's what, in fact, Grayson saw their numbers increase.
Liberal high school is almost 20%.
Yep.
There's going to be a lot. If and when this happens, there is a large push of being in the high school, communicated out, text messages, emails, counselors, on the media. You'll have meetings, releases. There's going to be a lot of fanfare that's around it. The other thing that Dr. Smar said was that they thought that it was going to be a larger dollar amount than it was because it's the last dollar in type of thing. So grants, any other scholarships all go in before this happens. They actually only, this year, they're only showing that they needed to raise about $150,000 to cover everybody that wanted to come in. So it's affordable.
Yeah. So you raise the funds.
Yep.
Max,
okay.
Would you take over the next item? I need to take a break.
Yes, I just worry. I tend to worry after our budget.
Oh, yes, absolutely, yeah. Oh, yeah.
We don't want to blow.
No, you're right. No, absolutely. We're,
we have enough trouble with the budget.
Yeah, we won't be losing money. We'll be raising it different ways.
So it's not a waiver. It's just it's coming from...
Basically, you're increasing what you get for scholarshiping.
You can increase your contact hours and all that kind of stuff.
Correct.
With other sources of money.
Correct. And you're getting the promise, you're getting it into the high school, so those students who think that that's not an opportunity for them, they're finding out about that earlier in life.
They're going to fit that real well.
Yes. Our whole service area, with all the young people that we have that are in scenarios where they're disadvantaged.
And does it only extend to our service area? So, like, Howard County, or could somebody who comes from East Texas from a rural area be qualified
I think it would just be, we would just be making the promise in our service area.
Correct. And, okay. And honestly, we will design exactly what the program looks like. It's not cookie cutter all over the state.
Yeah.
You know, Grayson has an adjusted gross income of $80,000 as their cutoff, but we would set those limits. We would say, you know, and we could technically roll it out to a small portion first and then expand, or we could do the entire service area. There's all sorts of flexibility.
Right. So again, we are in the fact finding course, going through finding out information. So we'll be back with more information as time goes on. Okay.
Okay. We are on the community workforce development.
Yes. Okay. All right. So again, board members, I hope you're seeing, you know, again, this is part of our focus on these four areas of our strategic plan. Access, what we're trying to do about access, get our numbers, student success, what we're trying to do in the area of student success. So this section is about community and workforce development. And last summer at the workshop, we talked about some of the things that we were doing. Well, one of those is an effort that we have going on our San Angelo campus. And it's in the CE area. And we had a company, Aeromotor. They are in the windmill world. You know, we're not talking about the wind turbines. We're talking about windmills. And there was a need for people that know how to work on those things. And so they came forward, worked with our people, and they are ready to give us a windmill, and it'll be on our campus, and then we will be doing the training. How many do we have in the first? Or will we have in the first class? And we have support from the chambers helping us with the students as far as the ones that are in need for scholarships. Aeromotor is also helping with some of the faculty costs. And so what we're asking you to do today is to resolutions that one would go to Aeromotor Windmill for donating the windmill and the installation that will be used for the training that will be on the campus. And then also a resolution for the San Angelo Chamber, basically for their active role in this initiative in providing scholarships to help us with the program. So, again, this is a perfect example. It's a short course, and students are going to be able to get out in the workforce quickly. And so on October the 7th, Friday, October the 7th at 2 p.m., we'll have a basically kind of a little, I guess you'd say, for lack of a better word, ribbon cutting, and we'll hand out these two resolutions at that time. So that's what we're asking for your approval for.
Aeromotor windmill resolution.
And the San Angelo Chamber of Commerce.
Mm-hmm. I have a motion to approve those. Have a motion to have a second. Have a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Thank you. Motion approved. Okay, Making Dreams Real.
All right. So, again, continuing in our area, our focus on community and workforce development, this is an initiative that Dee and some others started working on for the Big Spring campus that has applicability to all of our campuses, but basically it is a way to get our students taking advantage and going to the local stores, businesses, and supporting them. So Dee, you want to give a little bit of an overview of what this is about?
I have flyers too, if anybody would like to take any flyers. Last year, Nick Sedano, this was his brainchild, so kind of included me in on it, but it's a way for our students to get out and visit local businesses, and then also for local businesses to show support to our students. So basically what we're doing is we're going around to local businesses, handing out these flyers, asking them to offer our students a discount, and we're including all different kinds of businesses from tire shops, automotive repair, local restaurants, insurance companies, anybody, banks, that can provide some type of discount to our students. So in turn, the business will get shout-outs on our social media pages and then also advertising to our students. So we're trying to come up and develop a way where we can use a QR code so the students can scan that QR code and know what businesses provide what discounts. And this is open to all of Howard College students and all of SWIS students as well.
In the Big Spring area, but again, this is something that we can work on for our other campuses as well.
Right. And so right now, here's the little sticker. The business will get this little sticker. They'll put it by their cash register on their door, and so students can know and look for this little sticker right now. We're going to get it changed to where it'll be a little bit more generic for our SWIT campus to be included on it as well. But it just is kind of a reminder to the student to ask for whatever the discount might be for the student. So,
with their ID
card. A lot of businesses have examples of the ID cards as well. So as of right now, we've contacted over 25 local businesses. We have about 6 of them that have confirmed what type of discounts that they would provide to the students. And we have multiple ones that are pending right now, but we're trying to go out and promote this as much as possible. So the goal is for the students to feel supported in the community, and then the local community can also support our students. So if you have any questions or if you'd like any flyers to hand out, we have those available. We'd encourage everybody to join on board. So it's been real exciting to provide that, and then we'll get that out to our students pretty quick so they'll know that the community supports them as well.
Yeah. So it's a two-way street. You know, again, trying to also support the local businesses and get the students again, involved in the community, helping with retail. And so, again, we think this is their brainchild, but think we have applicability to our other communities as well. So, again, community workforce development. This is what we're trying to do.
All right. Performance assessments.
Okay. How often do we go through these bond rating? Okay. All right. And so, they just always show up at the opportune time. And so they generally come like in August, they'll do their review, right when we're in the middle of everything. LAR is going in and budgets being prepared and finalized and all of that. But this year, Fitch went through their review again. They did not change our rating. We are still AA-, but we wanted to report that and let you know. Is there anything else, Brenda, you'd want to say?
All right. I'm right at it. Wish it had gone up. Okay, purchasing. Telehealth Complete Care.
All right. You'll remember last month that we had that on the agenda, but we wanted to do some more work. And you'll also notice that there are some others that didn't make it to on the agenda back from last month. And we continue to have issues with trying to get people to submit bids. And so we keep working on that, and we're going to be bringing back some RFPs in October. But this one we are ready to discuss with you today. And so I've asked Steve will give you kind of a little bit of an overview, but Christy and Tara both worked on this. Yeah, come on, Tara. This is actually a very strong effort that's come out of the CARES funding.
This is just some brief information.
Yeah, sure. Sure. Yeah. And so we'll let Christy and Tara give like the conceptual part of this, and then Steve can talk about what it looks like funding-wise.
how we pay for it.
Okay, so we just put together a little bit of information for you about Timely MD. You'll also hear it called Timely Care. It's the same company. But we kind of came up with a mission together for what we feel that Howard College and Timely MD can do together. So together we can empower our Howard College SWID students to develop into well-rounded individuals in all aspects of their lives. And what this, the company surveyed 80% of students in college campuses throughout the United States, and they do not think the college is providing enough health services for them, majority of that being mental health services. With Timely MD, our students will be able to have access to mental health and medical care. So if they're sitting in their room and they are struggling and they don't know who to reach out to, they can call someone right then and get assistance. If their throat hurts, they have someone they can call right then and have a medical visit. It's all, at that time, would be free of charge to the students. And they'll talk about the financial aspect of it in a little bit. But this is not something where the student has to have money right then to be able to pay for a medical visit virtually or a counseling visit. It also, they can schedule counseling if they are needing to speak to someone in a specific field of what they're struggling with. They can schedule with a specific counselor. There's also psychiatry, which is very big because right now with our campus counselor, he is not able to prescribe them medication, but together with Timely MD and Dr. Hickam on campus, they can work together to ensure that this student is getting all of the help they need or continue their care from wherever they came from. This is also something if they go home to New York or wherever they go, they can still utilize this during the year. And so it's not something that is just only while they're on campus. It's for all four campuses. Something else that we were able to bring up with Timely MD was they have not had the question, what about deaf and hard of hearing students? Okay, so they have the chat option where they can chat back and forth. They also, the student can bring in a third person that can sit and help interpret for them as of right now. But what Timely MD said that made us a little more excited is, now they can run with this and do something about it. That's not something they had thought of in the past, and so now they're ready to move forward doing more for the deaf of heart and hard of hearing. They did this for Mandarin Chinese school that they were working with. They got that incorporated where those students could receive the help they needed. So we're very excited about that and the opportunities to work with this company. And then just on the back is some information about them. As we all know, socioeconomic status is an issue for some students, finances once they get here, gender, sexual orientation, the LGBTQIA+. They also have, you know, need there. They come to college, they start discovering new lives. They need to talk. They need someone to reach out to. They have everything. They cover all of that. People of color, issues with that. So they are trying to cover every aspect of a student's life and to help them mentally and to help them be a healthy, well-rounded student that can be successful in their college career and also be able to reach out to if they're struggling finding friends, finding that person, that study partner, someone they can work with to help them be successful as well.
And another thing is they also offer faculty and staff support and training for us to spot signs in the classroom or when we're having conversations with students. So that is another plus for not only the students but the faculty and staff.
And since COVID, we have really, our counseling has jumped. I would say probably doubled. We were over budget last year in counseling. And Dr. Hickam can only see patients on Fridays. So sometimes that could mean someone could wait 2 weeks for an appointment.
or even wait a week. Now, he is, I will say, very good. If I call him and it's an emergency, or if Tara calls and it's an emergency, he will do what he can to get there and attend to the students. I've had him come up twice already this year at odd times to help a student in need. But he can't always guarantee that. But this works. They can have six appointments along with Timely MD, but they can still have six appointments with Dr. Hickam here on campus as well, and further help with their counseling needs, their medical needs. Most of our students do not have health insurance. This is a way for them to talk to a doctor, and then we can assist. There's a prescription discount card, so we can also assist, you know, with their prescriptions, helping them get a discount there. So really, all they would be out is some prescription cost. And they can also then refer them if they feel they need to go to be COVID tested, or to they need to get to the ER right then. They have someone telling them instead of them sitting in their room not knowing what they should do or not knowing what to do because they can't pay for a doctor right now. They at least have someone to call, and it is 24/7. So anytime they can call for assistance. And the wait time is 2 to 3 minutes max as of right now.
Just kind of, again, as both of them have mentioned, it came out of the pandemic. You're seeing a great increase in the numbers of students that are expressing a need for mental health counseling. And particularly for our dorm students on the SWID and Big Spring campuses. But we obviously have the same needs for our students on the San Angelo and La Mesa campus. And in San Angelo, we have an LPC that assists, as we say sometimes, but our students on the SWID and Big Spring campuses, we have several that live with us. And so it's a little different when you have students that are away from their homes and all. And then, our La Mesa students have need as well. And basically, they have taken advantage with Dr. Hickam. But, again, this is something that the CARES funding really started promoting in the last year or so, wanting to increase what we were doing in the areas of mental health. But the reality is that it will run out, that funding will run out in June. So then we're going to have to be picking up from there. And we looked at a year. It was going to be much more expensive if we just went with a year. So we looked at a three-year. And so we would be going down the path of the increasing, having to do a student fee increase, and it would be around $20 per semester going into the next 2 years. So we...
I just wanted to add one thing. Yeah. This is also for all off-campus. This is online
sure.
students. Anyone, the only students not affected by this or not able to use this are dual credit.
Right.
And that's because you come into the waivers with the parents and so forth.
Right.
But it's the fact that they don't have to come seeking help. They already have the number and can just call right then, and there's no wait time.
Okay. All right. So, and we again, Steve, you do the business side of it.
Well, as we said, it's the most economical was to do a 3-year contract, and they did waive the setup $7,500 setup fee. We would go ahead and sign it by the end of this month, so that saved a little money. The total of it for the 3 years is $247,530, $82,510 per year. And because we're starting it in after the college fiscal year started, there's a college fiscal year and there's a contract fiscal year, and that's why there's the fourth year, although it's a 3-year contract, it runs into the fourth year of the college budget. But that does show how it breaks down. And we used all of the CARES money that we were able to apply to it through June the 30th, which was almost $62,000. And the rest of it would be paid by student fees is the thinking to do that. So that would be reimbursed. So there were two companies that RFPs were sent. The telehealth was substantially more than this, although this seems like a lot. This was the most economical of the two.
And Midland College?
Midland College, Abilene Christian University.
Amarillo College.
Amarillo College. Quite a few colleges are using this. This is the most, they've received the most acclamation, the most, most places are suggesting Timely MD. They also work with the JED Foundation, which is a foundation that works with training faculty and staff on how to work with mental health needs.
I'd already, and I failed to tell y'all when I told Tara to come up, but Tara's over our athlete and student support area, director of that, and so involved with a lot of the counseling. And so, again, they started looking at this and seeing the need last year and seeing what some of the other colleges were doing. Again, there's a lot of applicability to our students that live in dorms, but the reality is we have students all over the service area, but we didn't feel like we needed to get into dual credit. We wanted to be very careful not to do that.
On the contract, is there like a, there's not like, so if all 2,000 students used it, we don't get charged more? Or is it like, this is like a 500 visit fee, but if you do more?
It is a flat rate.
Okay.
Awesome. Okay, 20 bucks a semester, you think, student service fee?
20 a
semester.
So, yeah.
Okay, this is the one that you've got here with the $247,000. That's Timely MD, and the other one, because I looked at this and my eyes bugged out, $720,000 for hourly is the one you are not recommending.
We're not recommending. Right. That's just for your information.
Yeah.
It was $20,000 a month plus night charge.
Wow. Yeah.
All the time that the students were on there.
And they only have 3,600 students, the 3,600 students that they are currently working with, and only about 30 have used the service.
Yeah, well, I just saw the numbers, and I said, wait a minute, that's... Is there a possibility of getting any grant money for this after the first year? I mean,
it's possible. It's possible. And, yeah, we could seek to that.
CARES money and a little bit from us, which is...
Right. There's a possibility we could pursue that as well. Absolutely.
$2,000 a year.
Do we pay that full amount up front? And they've been in business like a long time. Oh, like, it's not like they're a year in or anything.
Right.
Okay.
No, and they're located here in Texas. They're out of Fort Worth, Texas. And Abilene Christian, the gentleman we've been working with, is graduated from Abilene Christian, is very, he's been actually hands-on and jumped on a call every time we need him to answer questions. We've had really good luck with him. And it was like for San Angelo, it's great because most of their students are off campus. So this is something, so it's great to have that on-campus person, but this just benefits so many students because they have the access no matter where they are.
And let us also reinforce the fact that we will still have the on-campus, the face-to-face option for students. But this will give them basically 24/7. And sometimes students don't want to come forward. You know, they don't want the face-to-face. So we're hopeful that we're going to be able to get more students to take advantage of counseling when they need it.
They'll take marketing, you know, a lot of marketing, and they'll be assisting with that as well.
You said your prescriptions, and we've talked, kind of touched on prescriptions. Are these people, Timely MD, actually able to prescribe over the phone?
They'll call it into the pharmacy directly.
They'll call it the pharmacy directly.
Yes.
Oh, so they actually can do the prescription.
Yes. And they will work with like Lana Hubbard on San Angelo and Dr. Hickman here on our campus as well. They will work with them.
Okay. Any more conversation? Any more questions? I'll need a motion to approve this.
So moved.
I have a motion. Do I have a second?
Second.
I have a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Okay. Motion passes. Thank you very much. Okay, handbook and catalog changes.
All right.
In this section, as you know, last month you gave us the authority to take different portions of that, the policy information that we'd shared with you, and to update the existing IT policy, which we have done in 4.8, so we're just bringing this back as an informational item. But we do need approval on a catalog change in the ITSC 2329. Prerequisites for this course have been deleted. And so we do need approval for that.
Okay. I have a motion to approve that.
So,
I have a motion to have a second.
Second.
I have a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Thank you. All right. Construction renovation projects.
Okay. You have in your board book, you have some of the information on the roofing update. Terry and Fabian, if y'all want to come forward and we can try to go through this quickly, kind of give the board an update on where we are with the roofing, the flood, the library and music building renovations, and the SWID project.
Well, the roofing project is, it's coming pretty much to a close. We've got Farco, the mechanical contractor, that is the subcontractor to HCR. They found three clog drains, roof drains on the Warren building. So those will have to be, they'll have to be, the clogged areas cut out, and that'll have to be replaced. The Coliseum is the last piece of this project. And we've got about, I'd say just over half of the slanted metal that has been replaced. And you can see that picture in the report. The plan was to be through long before now, and then when we had our last meeting with architects and the roofing company, They were looking to be through by the end of September. I can tell you that that is not going to happen. We had some delays in approving some materials and methods on the Coliseum roof. That basically between that and a little rain shower that we had, or maybe a couple, it burned about 2 weeks of time, and so that was a setback. Last week. Matter of fact, on Friday, Farco had a crane here that raised the heating and air conditioning units on the west end of the Coliseum. The plan was to do the east end on Saturday, but the crew that was supposed to come do that was not able. They got tied up on another job that didn't get through. So that's going to happen this coming Friday. We've worked out a schedule with the library. So we're not going to affect the update on the flood, sort of in a cooperative effort between Fabian and myself. I've mostly worked with WCR and DeWitt Contracting on mechanics. Fabian found us a good contractor on Garrett, and that's, of course, as you've read in these reports, that's been done for a long time. And maybe you want to talk about the Coliseum. Well, the concrete in McKinney and then the Coliseum.
Yeah, so the concrete in McKinney building, we're looking at polishing the floors in the classrooms, offices, vestibules, bathrooms, and that one hallway that connects the entire building. Right now we're getting quotes anywhere from, I think the highest has been, like 70,000, 74,000, something like that, and the lowest. Upper 20, I think, like 29. In the last email that I had sent, we're waiting on one more quote, but I'm actually waiting on a second one. Found one other contractor out of San Angelo, and he has a new business, but he's not new to the business. He's been doing this for 11 years and decided to go out on his own and do this, so he's very interested in working for us. He's done some work for Angelo State, so he's really wanting to get this job here with us, asking lots of questions, which is good. So that's where we're at with the concrete polishing. Coliseum, still have two quotes. Contacted two other contractors. One contractor told me that he would be here that afternoon, never showed up, never called me, nothing. Then I had another one who did show up. He came over and he measured everything, and I'm still waiting on his quote. He said he would give me something today, but I haven't seen anything in my email for the Coliseum rebuild.
And that amount at this point will be under the amount that we would need to have approval from the board, so we'll be able to, we've already got some that are low enough that we can go with that. And so it will enable us to get on it because we need to get that Coliseum back in shape.
And the one with that amount that you're talking about is the same contractor that rebuilt the horse care, the drywall.
Did a fantastic job.
Yeah. So we're getting there, slowly getting there. All right. And then let's tell you about SWID.
SWID, where do you want to start?
Well, just as far as what's happening with the diagnostic.
If you'd like to see some excitement, the demolition building's being demolished. Diagnostic building is being demolished as we speak, so they started this morning.
Coming down fast.
Yeah, it's a pretty big excavator that they're imploding it with. So, yeah.
Chip seal project is done. Stripe. I don't know if I brought that up last month or not, but it's done. Striping is done. It's great.
The lighting is for both the SWID campus and the Big Spring campus.
So on the SWID campus, there was a total of 15 lights that were supposed to be done. They have all but one that is done. And here on the Big Spring campus, there was a total of three lights, dark lights, for being upgraded to LED. Only one of the three have been completed here on the Big Spring campus, and the reason for that is supply issue. The brackets that are mounted on the poles that then hold the fixture were back-ordered, and they were supposed to be here any time. So I'll be reaching out to Encore and asking for them. We're out on the light. But it's much, much brighter out there on our SWID campus.
Alrighty.
I don't know if Danny's heard anything from the students. I know security loves it. They tell me all the time.
How long are we doing after the flood? We don't want to know about that.
You know, that's a saga, really. I sent United Fire Group an email. I don't know, I copied you on it, Dr. Parks. It was about Thursday or Friday last week. And I got an automated reply stating that the adjuster was out of the office until sometime this week. So it had been the full 3 months since their engineer had been on campus and done his measurements and inspections, and when the day that work was done, I asked him, I said, how long before your report's done? He said, typically my reports take 2 weeks. This one's going to be longer. It'll take three. It's now been 3 months. So, and of course, he doesn't work for us. He works for United Fire Group. So it's, you know, we're in a position that all we can do is just ask. And
United Fire Group is not our insurer, and so,
yeah,
you know, that's WCR. Yeah, so we're just kind of in a wait.
But to WCR's credit, and I think I've put some of that in the report, or we've talked about it at least, that WCR and DeWitt Contracting, between Garrett and McKinney, they have stepped up to the plate, and they have basically done everything we've asked to put those buildings back in service at their own cost. Now, obviously, I know they're hoping to get reimbursed by the insurance company whenever they determine whether or not they will pay this claim. And I'll make a comment on that. United Fire Group, when Garrett flooded the first time, they paid the claim. I'm not sure how they could justify paying one and not the second, because basically it's, you know, the same event just the second time, and so I think, you know, I think for them to not pay the claim to us, our loss on top of just what the damage has done to the building for fixtures, furniture, equipment, supplies, was just under $90,000. And the estimate that we had, if we had gone out on contract to just restore McKinney, would have been over $700,000. Now, because DeWitt and WCR have been able to do that work, if you will, in-house with their own staff and everything, it did not cost them nearly that. So it was essentially a win-win for them and for us. But, we just still, we're in a situation where we just have to wait. I don't know if, you know, I've toyed with the idea of talking to Dr. Sparks about turning him into the State Board of Insurance, but I don't know if that accomplishes what we want to accomplish or not.
At this point, it sounds like the maximum damage to us has continued to shrink, and now it's about $90,000.
It is.
So that certainly...
We did have a $50,000 deductible. Well, on Coliseum, we had a $50,000 deductible on that claim. But our insurance, Travelers, that was the insurer when that happened, it's since changed. But, Travelers has paid all but the deductible, and there's still just a small amount that they have not approved with ServiceMaster.
Basically, on the other building, we have it's a potential $90,000. That's a lot less than story.
That's true. You know, and that basically covers chairs, desks, cabinets, other fixtures, not the building per se itself, just content. Some of the things were personal items that the occupants of the building lost, you know, that were on their desks or whatever, you know, a diploma on the wall, whatever, those kinds of things. And we fully believe that those losses should be covered too.
Yeah, we've made progress.
Every time I ask you, it seems that the numbers shrink, which is good. I mean, that's all you can do.
That's right.
And we're not in a position of control. You know, we just, you know, we're in a position that we're just having to wait, unless we decide to get more aggressive on some way, legally or
in the right direction. That's all.
True. On the positive note, I think the fact that they have not denied the claim is a plus. I mean, that the UFG, United Fire Group, has not denied the claim. So, you know, the door's still open for them to pay it. You know, the longer they can drag this out, and, you know, then they have the use of their money until. So I think that's a tactic that is pretty
difficult.
Good choice of words right there. So,
okay. Thank y'all.
Want to update on music and library?
Yes. Okay. Sorry, I forgot that part.
That's the music and library projects. The bids are approved. The contracts are signed. The music building, as you recall, the abatement of the windows was delayed so that we didn't have to have a boarded up building. That work will begin on Wednesday. J.C. Roberts, that won the contract for both buildings, I'll be meeting with them and Fabian as well on Wednesday, I believe at 1 o'clock. I haven't received a firm time on that on Wednesday, but I think that it's 1 o'clock. And that'll be our first pre-construction meeting with J.C. Roberts. And I'm sorry, and not this Wednesday, but Wednesday, I believe it's October 6th.
I think that covers it, yep. But then as far as the library building, they'll start moving in.
You know, I think J.C. Roberts is probably anxious to get started because the longer this drags out, the more risk they have on cost of materials, labor, everything else. So I know that, you've signed both contracts. They're in the files. I'm sure they're ordering supplies and they're ready to get started.
Okay. Thanks. All right. Mr. Vice Chair, you've already
done the student
information system so we can get to the President's report, and I think I can take us to the end.
I think you can.
All right. Okay, so on, you've got your calendars, and you see a lot of the things that are going on. Just try to hit a few little high points here. We have several of our athletic events are going on. We've already talked about the windmill celebration. We've got some of our music and theater events beginning. And then I want to make a special note of on October 13th, we have our San Angelo Phi Theta Kappa and Award Ceremony, and that will be happening for the fall semester. And then we move into basically the second 8 weeks begins on the 17th of October. And then I need to get y'all to talk about, we need to make a decision here on what you want to do. Relative to, right now we have your October board meeting scheduled for the 24th. But that is also, you'll note, for those that are going to the ACCT conference, that is the same, that is the Monday of that week. And I think there are some of the trustees that are planning on going ahead and before we get to the conference. And so we need to know, do you want to move your board meeting in October up to the 17th as opposed to the 24th? That also then I'm going to take you to the month of November again because we plan, basically we plan all of our activity around what we need to do for you all and prepare for meetings. And so in November, the meeting would be the Monday of Thanksgiving week. We have some board members who have children that are in the schools, and the schools are, for the most part, are giving the entire week of Thanksgiving as a break. And last year, as a result of that, there was a decision then y'all wanted to move the board meeting in November up a week. So that would mean that the board meeting in November, instead of it being on the 21st, it would be on the 14th. So we need some direction from y'all on how you want to handle that, because that, again, everything we set up and, you know, things that are opened and all that relates around board meetings. So I guess start with the October, Mr. Chairman, what we were talking about, the October board meeting. I was going over the calendar. And right now, the board meeting is scheduled for the 24th, which is the Monday of the ACT conference week. And I think some of the board members are planning on going in several days ahead of the conference itself. And so need to find out if y'all want to have the board meeting on the 17th or the 24th of October. And then the same thing relative to November, do you want to move the board meeting from the 21st of November to the 14th? So if y'all can give us direction, and then we'll know how to where to go from there.
I think moving both of them might be a good idea.
Hey,
I'm fine with it.
Okay. Raul and Adrian, are y'all still on the line?
Yes, ma'am. I'm okay with moving it up to the 14th and the 17th.
Okay.
And then Adrian had to get off. Okay, I suspect he will agree, because I remember last year I think he was in favor of that. So, okay. So we will accordingly, and we'll be back then. That means we'll be back in 3 weeks with another board meeting, and we will plan accordingly. All right, so Mr. Chairman, I said to Vice Chairman that I could take us to the end, so
yes,
I'm going to keep
please.
On going.
Please do.
Okay, so on recognitions, wanted to, again, I've already mentioned the theater department. They presented their first performance this year, A Night of Shorts, by Shel Silverstein, and that was well received. They're working on several others that are coming up, and so we will enjoy watching those over the next few weeks, as well as the recitals that we've got. I mentioned already that we were going to be having a December graduation, first time for our St. Angel campus, and we'll be coming back with some more information about that. And then already mentioned the fact that we have our awards convocation that is scheduled for in October. Moving to legislative and general updates, I've kind of already shared some of this information, but let me quickly try to do a synopsis of what's happening with the commission. Basically, I'm just going to say it like this. They're basically flip-flopping the way that we do funding. They are going to be recommending that, as opposed to we have lived on thinking it's all about contact hours. Our whole funding model has been based on that. Basically, they are flip-flopping it. Whereas, you know, we have been in a scenario where we've had our success points and like 90% of our funding is based on contact hours, 10% is based on outcomes. The recommendation is that they want to move us to funding that's based on outcomes. And it'll be less on contact hours. We'll have some contact hours, but it'll be mainly based on your outcomes, your graduations, your transfers. You're going to be interested in number of hours completed, a lot of the things that we've seen before as far as some of our success points, but there will be more. Mentioned already that there's an interest in how are you working with your regional labor market? What are you doing to make sure that you are providing what your labor market needs? So there's going to be a big impact on that. Dual credit. There's interest in making sure that your dual credit students are counted as part of your outcomes as far as when they complete so many hours, when they transfer and they go to a university and they don't necessarily come to you, but they transfer, that counts. Some things like that are being recommended. The small schools, rural colleges, they're also looking at recommending that there is funding as it relates to those that have small tax bases. We've talked about the fact that you have fluctuating tax bases, and you know, obviously brought up the fact that, like in our scenario, we have fluctuating tax base as a small college. We may go up when oil is good, but when oil goes down, then here we are. And so will there be estimations or fluctuations in the way that they allow funding for that part of a formula to be used for colleges that experience that? And yes, that is being discussed. Also, funding, as I mentioned earlier, for economically disadvantaged students, putting more money into TEOG, and so that those students have the funding to be able to go to college. So there, again, lots of change. The commission is going to meet on October the 18th and will make their final recommendations at that point in time. Then it starts the legislative process. And as a group of community colleges, we're trying to do all of our discussion right now so that when we go into the legislative session and before the commission actually approves it, that we are coalescing around the ideas and are in support of it so that we can come out unified, because as soon as that recommendation is approved on the 18th, and we'll start the legislative process. So a lot of the things that we've been talking about, it's this coming, you know, that is changing the way that our funding is going to come to us. And so they're building in a hold harmless as we all adjust, because we think there is going to be an adjusting period. So that's kind of that's a summary. When we come back in October, actually that board meeting is going to be, that we just discussed, will be the Monday before the actual meeting, which is on the 18th. So at the November board meeting, I can give kind of the final analysis where we are and how we're going into the session. So that's the commission. The other thing that I would want to say about legislative, we are beginning to prepare our legislative team. Now, with the understanding this information is coming, we're going to be talking to you about the recommendations. It's going to be a different approach. So our representative and our two senators, we do have the one senator that will not officially be in place until January, but we're trying to build the framework for all of that so that as soon as that happens, we can hit the ground running. And so that is in place. Okay. We've had a lot of activity, a lot of opportunity with the West Texas Legislative meeting, having our ribbon cutting for the bypass on our campus, the Ports to Plains Conference. We've had a lot of opportunity to be making connections with a lot of individuals that, as we get more information, we can move quickly to start getting this word out. Board training, cybersecurity training, everybody completed on time, so we just put that back on again so that we could check it off the list and everybody would know that was timely done. New trustee training, Raul's still working on his training, but he will have the training that's due in November, and then he's going to have a choice of either doing the training in person in Austin for the coordinating board training, or he can do the virtual training. And so I'll share that information with him, and then we'll be talking more, see what his preferences are going to be about that. Finally, Ben had asked about the West Texas Region Trustee Leadership Seminar. It is actually going to be next Friday. It is going to be at Amarillo College. You can attend in person, or they are going to live stream it. And so if you're interested in that, you need to let me know, and we can plan accordingly. Finally, we're finalizing the itinerary for the ACCT meeting. Since we've got several that are, we're doing some things. We have Roel on the line. Adrian's had to get off, and then Mark is unable to participate today. We'll do some things through texting and try to get some final information as far as what you all are preferring, and we'll finalize that itinerary and get it to you. All right. There you go.
I asked you another question about the...
Yes, sir.
I brought this up before about the September 30th...
Yes, sir.
...meeting in Amarillo.
Yes, sir.
That seems to be sinking without much of a trace.
Okay.
I brought that up last month, too, when it was kind of like, well, you'd all just got an email. Is the position of the college or the administration that we should go, whether virtually or not, that someone from the college is going, that you are going to be going? It seems to me, and I'm not necessarily pushing for any particular solution, but this, it seems like they were making quite a big deal out of the fact that this was happening, they were having this in West Texas.
Right.
And I think we are, to use a word, a little bit churlish if we just drop it.
Sure.
And, you know, they have made the effort to come to us.
Sure, absolutely.
And we don't seem to be horribly interested in talking about it, deciding if we're going to it, encouraging people to go to it, or in sort of doing more than sort of acknowledging
right.
It's out there.
Right.
As someone who deals with this in other venues, several other venues, about, you know, being in the wilds of West Texas and being
right.
ignored, they're making an effort. I mean,
sure.
I wonder what's the deal and what is the college hoping that somebody will do?
I think that, again, as a board, y'all have kind of fluctuated through the years as far as your, you know, your involvement with CAT. And so, I mean, you always, as far as at the national, the ACCT meeting, you have made an effort to try to participate there. And then, you know, so again, it's just kind of whatever y'all want to do. You know, the meeting is that next Friday week. This Friday. Yeah. Either attend or not. Or if you want to take advantage of it live stream, you can do that. You participated in the seminars. You were quite active in the when they did. This is another seminar opportunity, and so you were active in that before. So it's really just what you want to do.
I mean, they even went to the trouble of sending us a little present.
Yeah, sure.
And they're hoping.
Yeah.
Do we need to be, we obviously need to be registered in some way.
Yes, yes.
Okay. It is unclear to me from reading the initial email and then the letter that you put in here, who does that registration?
We can do it for y'all, depending on what you want to do.
It just seems to me that someone will go. I mean, please register me for virtual.
Okay.
I don't think I can necessarily go to Amarillo. We're kind of doing this at the last minute, but I'll certainly try to look in on it, at least
yeah.
for a while.
Absolutely. Right.
And I certainly would encourage somebody else to.
Yeah. Well, and
do it, to
yeah.
do that. I mean,
yeah,
you know,
sure.
I think we need to be.
Sure.
You know, how many of these colleges in West Texas? There are 50 altogether, and most of them are probably in East Texas. So what are there, maybe 10 or 15 in West Texas, more or less? I mean, it's kind of too
about
bad.
Eight.
Howard.
Yeah.
How many?
About eight. Frank, Clarendon, Amarillo, South Plains. No, that's probably, there's more than that. There's probably
okay.
10 to 12.
Yeah, I just think it would be unfortunate if
sure.
we were not.
Sure.
Participating.
Oh, definitely. Yeah.
Way.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. And I, you know, yes, I'm just kind of at y'all's, you know, whatever y'all want to do.
We're looking for direction from the
from me.
Administration. And
okay.
For us to, so I guess I would hope that at least somebody else also still be or at least represented
right.
in a reasonable way.
Right. Yes.
I think that if we had done this earlier, maybe somebody's have gone here or
right.
useful.
Right.
I think it's also useful because the board at least, I don't know anybody else, but I certainly don't interact with any of the other colleges.
Right.
You know, Midland, Odessa, whatever. And we need to do that. We need to be aware of who they are and they need to be aware of who we are.
Right. Yeah, as I say, kind of in the past, what the board has done, you know, just based on past involvement, it has mainly been through the seminars and then the meeting down at Horseshoe Bay. So, and then the ACCT meeting. They haven't had one of these regionally before. So, you know, again, just based on, you know, based on what y'all have done in the past, couldn't tell really what you wanted to do, you know, if you wanted to get that involved or not. Certainly, I can go, and I'm certainly willing to do that, or I will be doing the virtual, but for sure, you know, it'd be, you know, great if some of y'all want to do the...
I didn't really know that.
Yeah.
It just seemed to me that it was disappearing without a trace.
Yeah.
So I will participate virtually if you can sign me up.
For sure.
Sorry, I don't virtually believe that.
Okay.
I know for me personally, I cannot do that day just because I'm coaching right now, and that was the whole reason why.
Sure.
I could go to the game on Friday. Well, I don't think everybody has to go. I would say that. I mean, I just think we need to be
sure.
Independent.
Oh, absolutely.
If Sparks is going and I'm going, you know, virtually, and maybe somebody else goes, then we're there.
I'm not going to be able to make it either.
At least we made an effort.
Absolutely.
I have run into this with so many other organizations and whatever, where, you know, we're out here in the wilds of West Texas, and they ignore us, and, you know, they're all busy in Houston and Dallas and whatever. And then, you know, so if someone does make an effort, if you don't step up to it, then the
Absolutely.
Next time they go to do it, they'll be back in Houston and Dallas.
Sure. Yes.
You know, I mean, because
Absolutely.
You have to make an effort.
Absolutely.
You have to meet them halfway.
Yeah, absolutely. And I will say, generally, I would do that, you know, as far as anything in the West Texas area. But as far as, you know, it's just what y'all want to do.
If you're going, I'll do the virtual. Probably I would suspect you're going to do the virtual. You haven't made plans, obviously, at this point. Not to do
but I've had it. I've have it on my calendar, so I could do either.
Yeah.
You know.
I mean,
so
you know, we have it takes a little planning and whatever. If somebody else decides to do it, then so much the better. Maybe let me know if you're definitely going to go in person, and you decide to do that. Maybe I'll try to figure out how to go in person. I think my preferred option right now would be to do
the virtual. Okay. All right.
All right.
Good.
That's it.
I don't personally have anything to report except that some of the medication that I've been taking finally decided to work, and I apologize for that. And by the authority granted by the governor, this meeting's adjourned.
Thank you. Roel, we're hanging up.
All right. Have a good day. Thank you.
Thank you. You too.
Bye-bye.
Text. And Fabian, you were gone. Not Fabian. Adrian, you were gone.
Oh, man. I've been taking medicine for 3 days trying to do that, and now it's not sure.
You're getting that. You're getting the medicine out of your system.
Yeah. Kind of embarrassing.
We're about to get to the Merkel right now, and so it's like he's going to bring into.
We're sorry. Your conference is ending now. Please hang up.